randomized to multiple sclerosis. And yeah, so there's little, there's still like the molecular evidence for this is still pretty new. Like there's not a lot out there, but there's the epidemiological evidence is pretty strong.
So what is EPV again?
EBV, Epstein-Barr virus?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in the herpes virus family. So it's related to, you know, genital herpes or oral herpes, but also to varicella zoster versus chickenpox. And so these herpes viruses are very common. EBV and also CMV, cytomegalovirus, that's another herpes virus that most humans are infected with at some point. So EBV can cause mononucleosis, and but most people are asymptomatic, and it's just something that you know, most adults get or have at some point. Maybe you have symptoms, maybe you don't, but it can remain latent in your B cells for a long period of time. And so they think that's part of also what might cause multiple sclerosis, is the reactivation of the virus after being latent. And that can also perhaps trigger these flares of multiple sclerosis. But yeah, EBV is a herpes virus, which means it's a double-stranded DNA virus with a relatively large genome that is particularly good at living in humans for long periods of time.
And what does multiple sclerosis entail?
Yeah, so I'm not a multiple sclerosis expert necessarily, but generally speaking, at least on a cellular level, it entails attack of your central nervous system by the T cells of your immune system. And patients will get these flares, these attacks of T cells on their the nervous system, which, you know, I think can have quite a wide array of results, you know, physiologically for the patients. But, you know, over a longer period of time, you know, you can often lose the ability to, you know, walk, see, speak, you know, as the disease progresses. So it's a really severe disease, but often the course of it, you know, is can span decades. If it does worsen at all, it's pretty, I think it can be pretty variable for those affected.
Okay, very, very interesting. Thank you. And do you know how many different kind of autoimmune diseases are known? And are there any known to the scientific community but not to the general public?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I'm sure there's dozens, if not hundreds. You know, it always depends a little bit on just how specific you're getting and breaking down the particular classes of disease. In terms of, you know, which ones are known to the public versus not, I'd probably have to go with at least one that my lab's been interested in studying lately, which is called ankylosing spondylitis. Because it is relatively rare, I think not many people have heard of it. But it's in the rheumatological, you know, autoimmune disease family, in that it affects joints predominantly. I assume that's why it's classified, you know, with rheumatological diseases, but I can't say I know for sure. But anyways, the unique thing about it is that it also has a very, very strong genetic component, one of the strongest genetic components of any autoimmune disease, such that essentially all those affected by ankylosing spondylitis have the same genetic variant in a gene called HLA-B. And that's something 90% of people with ankylosing spondylitis have the same HLA-B gene variant. And so it's pretty well known in the scientific community because of that aspect of it, but it's rare enough that it's not well known by the general public, just due to its rarity.
And it belongs to the same family as, like, arthritis, then?
Yeah, because you can have... one of the main manifestations is joint inflammation, particularly the large joints, including the spinal cord. And so left untreated, the inflammation in the spinal cord can lead to a bone fusion of the spinal cord. And ultimately what's called bamboo spine, where all the vertebrae fuse together. And you can kind of imagine, you know, bamboo, and so you completely lose flexibility in your spine.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So on to the next question. So are autoimmune diseases more strongly influenced by genetic or environmental factors, or are they influenced most by, like, diet, or does it really depend on, like, the autoimmune disease?
Yeah, I think it depends a lot on the disease. You know, like I mentioned, the ankylosing spondylitis is probably the strongest genetic component of any autoimmune disease, but then others like multiple sclerosis, you know, you have a strong environmental factor, which is a prior infection with EBV. But then not everyone who has EBV gets multiple sclerosis, and not everyone who has that HLA-B variant gets ankylosing spondylitis, so there have to be other factors, right? And so that's where the environment comes into play, whether it's diet or infectious disease history. There has to be some other trigger that generally, you know, across the board, they're almost completely not understood as to what that trigger is, the environmental trigger, I should say. But I'd say most diseases, even autoimmune or not, there's important environmental factors.
And do...
So being a geneticist, yeah. I'm certainly biased towards the genetics.
Yeah.
It's like if you made me choose, I would say, oh, genetics are the choice, obviously, for more strongly influencing autoimmune disease. But if you talk to an epidemiologist, you might get a more unbiased answer.
Okay, so for the genetic component, is there, like, a certain gene that's passed on or a certain gene that's, like, amplified that causes autoimmune diseases?
Yeah, and again, you know, cause is probably a stronger word than I might be comfortable with, because there's generally more of a predisposition that's involved. And it's hard because we don't know the immediate trigger of these diseases. We can't really say what causes it, strictly speaking, right? And so my favorite set of genes that tend to predispose to autoimmune disease are those in the major histocompatibility locus. And so it's this region on our chromosome 6 that was initially discovered, in that it dictated who could receive organ transplants from anyone else. And so it was discovered close to 100 years ago, you know, that, for instance, siblings were more likely to be able to receive transplants from one another than from a random stranger, say. And it turns out the biggest determinant of whether or not you could receive a transplant all came down to this one region on chromosome 6 in humans. And there's similar regions across all other vertebrates that dictate the same compatibility. And so this region that dictates transplant compatibility was called the major histocompatibility complex. And turns out the genes in this region are critically important, really indispensable for our adaptive immune response, or the immune response that can learn about a pathogen and memorize it over the course of our lives. And so these adaptive immune genes in the major histocompatibility complex that probably are the strongest determinants of, relative to any other gene in the human genome, of whether or not someone develops autoimmune disease more broadly.
Okay.
So whether it's diabetes, multiple sclerosis, lupus, ankylosing spondylitis, I should have looked this up before the meeting for our podcast, of Crohn's, I'd be shocked if there wasn't MHC predisposition. So that's certainly heritable. You know, you get one copy, one set of genes from your parent and one set from each parent. And then that can influence your risk of autoimmune disease.
And
there is an MHC component to Crohn's as well.
Oh wow, okay, that's really interesting. And now that you were mentioning adaptability, do you think, I know this is a bit different, but like personalized medicine, how does it relate to targeting specific genes?
Yeah, so say relating back to our the MHC topic,